Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast. The D-Fly and Dixie Podcast is brought to you by our presenting partner, the Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse Analysts, and my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, every team is out there trying to fulfill their goals and dreams, and the road to championship weekend starts on Saturday. Got a great show today featuring an interview with Tom Abbott, who is the NCAA National Coordinator of Officiating, talk about some of the new rules and how they come about. We have some game previews, finally, some awesome games coming up. So, Dixie, let's get it. Woo-hoo! Dix, I've been enjoying all the social media posts from college teams about it being game week, finally. It's such an exciting time for all of these squads, and I know you've got to be pumped.
I am. And it couldn't come at a better time with the Ravens laying an egg in the AFC Championship game to the Kansas City Chiefs. What a disappointing end to what was really shaping up to be a historic, prolific season in Ravens football. But no, you're right. It's game week. Ton of games on tap. Personally, you know, my son, Matt, and the Loyola Greyhounds welcome in the Georgetown Hoyas. My younger son, Owen, at North Carolina, they have a weekend of scrimmages. They'll take on Drexel and Washington Lee down at Chapel Hill before they kick off on the 10th. But it's here, you know. And I bring up my boys because, you know, we're going to have a conversation later with Tom Abbott. And he is not only the national, you know, director of officials for Niloa, but, you know, also a lacrosse dad with two well-known lacrosse sons. So it's a really exciting time of year. It's chilly, but it's not brutal. This past weekend, a lot of scrimmages in the Mid-Atlantic region, and it was, 55 degrees?
Yeah, Hopkins had a planned one indoors at the St. James down in, you know, near D.C., and it was so nice. They're like, no, let's have it at Homewood Field, break in our new turf. And have it outside on a Friday night at 65 degrees. So
I saw pictures of that. I saw pictures from that scrimmage. The referees were wearing short shorts, meaning short sleeves and shorts.
Yeah.
When in February do you ever see officials wearing short and short, not only for a February scrimmage / game, but at night when the sun was down?
Yeah. Yeah. So you saw that on social media. A quick plug for us. We have a new Twitter account. It's D-Fly and Dixie on Twitter. Please like us. You'll see a lot more content coming there from us. Again, it's at D-Fly and Dixie. And if you want to send us an email, set up a Gmail account for us. Again, that's dflyanddixie@gmail.com. All right, go ahead.
I mean, you nailed it. I love the fact you're out there. You're working, man. You're busier than a one-arm coat hanger. Is that one of the sayings? If that even makes sense?
I always liked busier than a one-legged man at a butt-kicking contest.
There you go. Yeah, but you're making it happen. We got some great sponsors lined up for 2024, including Simplicity, our friends at Simplicity. And then you're making it happen on the social media, and people can now get a hold of us. You know, we're not short of giving out our cell phone numbers. So you can send us irate, belligerent texts and, you know, chirp at us on social media. You can send us emails, which is great.
And we do give out our cell phone numbers. There were quite a few people who texted me and you about the first pod dropping last weekend, which was really nice to see. Like,
that is
we
true.
We have some really good, loyal friends in the lacrosse community, and it's always good to hear from you. Dixie,
no doubt.
Inside Lacrosse released its preseason All-Americans earlier this week, and I wasn't surprised by any of it. You know, a little disappointed that my man Mike G only made honorable mention, but it's the goal is set. You know, there's
not where you start, it's where you fit.
One thing I did see is, you know, I got to know some of those Princeton players who are now all over the country. And man, if Princeton could have some fifth years, they would have a massive squad this year. Seeing Jake Stevens being a first team, Bo Pedersen being a second team, Sam English, who we're going to interview Tom Abbott, but Sam English reminds me a little bit of Matt Abbott type of game that he plays. Anyway, what were your thoughts on the IL preseason All-Americans?
The first thing that jumps out immediately is I like how Inside Lacrosse does it. Three attackmen, three middies, one Fogo, two shorties, a pole, three close D, and a goalie. Because we've seen over the years the All-American team kind of how many kids they pick. One year it could be seven first-team All-American attackmen. It could be two defensemen. Like, and I get it to a certain extent, but this is clear differentiation. Like you mentioned, no surprises. I think when you're looking at the attack, the big question was, so you've got Brennan O'Neill, the only unanimous selection, the All-American from Duke, Tuorton winner, most valuable player from the World Games this past summer, CJ Kurse of Cornell, Connor Schellenberger of Virginia. I guess the question was, Pat Cavanaugh, where does he fit into that mix? So the tribe has spoken. O'Neill, Kurse, Schellenberger, first team All-American, Pat Cavanaugh joins Coulter Mackesy of Princeton and TJ Malone of Penn State on the second team. So that jumped out at me immediately. Graham Bundy Jr. might be the best midfielder in the country, but Eric Dobson, first team All-American, preseason notification was outstanding in last year's NCAA tournament. And then you just look down the list. Roy Meyer has established himself as the premier pole in the country from Boston University, of the Terriers. So a Patriot League team getting a first team preseason All-American. But outside of that, very ACC heavy on the first team. Second team, when you look at the second team, we just mentioned the attackman, but one of your Princeton faves, Alex Vardaro, he's actually playing attack right now for Georgetown, but he's listed as a second team All-American midfielder. And this is where the Big Ten really makes presence. On the first team, you've got Ajax Zapatello from Maryland, and then Bo Peterson, a short stick from Michigan, is represented on the first team. But on the second team, you're talking Shane Knoblauch, Rutgers, Matt Trainor, Penn State. We already mentioned TJ Malone, Brett Martin, shorty from Hopkins, Grant Haws, shorty, Penn State, Scott Smith, defenseman from Hopkins, Jack Frassion from Penn State, the second team goalie, AJ Pilot clocking in as a second team All-American defender for Army, really a media darling to kick off 2024. Then you get to the third team. And that is some heavy Army representation. Jake Morin, midfielder, Will Colletti, face off, two guys there. And then some more Big Ten slash ACC, Ivy League as well. Matt Brandau from Yale, Bobby Van Buren, Ohio State, and then you get into the HMs. And again, Inside Lacrosse didn't go crazy with the honorable mentions. It's one, two, what do we got there? Six attackmen, seven middies, three face-off guys, four shorties, three LSMs. Looks like what? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. So, nine close D and then four goalies, including your guy, Mike G. So the with it being a smaller number, and with the way the sport is trending these days, heavy, heavy on ACC and Big Ten, first, second, third teams, first team in particular, as well as the HMs. And then you have your Ivies, your Patriots, and Big East, courtesy mostly of Georgetown and Denver, represented on the preseason All-American team. Mason Woodward, you don't want to talk about Big East, second team defender, Marquette, a kid who's just started every minute since he stepped into Milwaukee and could establish himself eventually, I think, maybe as a potential first team All-American when it's all said and done. So, like you said, no surprises. There's nothing on here that jumps out and makes you say, "Oh wow, where'd they come from?" Or who is that? Logan McNaney, an honorable mention, obviously, what a first team All-American a couple of years ago in the 2022 season when Maryland won the national championship, coming off of that knee injury. Missed 2023. I'd be interested to see how he comes out in 2024. All indications for their first two scrimmages against Duke and Georgetown, he looks great. So he's a guy that could probably elevate himself off that honorable mention team.
I mean, when I look at this, what I see mostly is just a depth of talent in college lacrosse this season. And a lot of it has to do, obviously, with the COVID year, extra year, and the transfer rules, which allow you to play right away when you transfer. But a lot of you
I
see a
think
lot.
along those lines, we should note that this is the last year of the COVID holdover. So, in other words, the guys that are fifth years this year are the graduating high school class of 2019. So they were freshmen when COVID hit, and then therefore they get the extra year of eligibility. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the only kids next year available for extra years of eligibility are obviously, you know, if you have medical red shirts, but also it is Division III kids. So Division III players that were high school graduation class of 2020 have an extra year of eligibility. And then so, there's about a dozen Ivy League kids that are in the portal.
Well, the Ivy League schools who didn't play lacrosse
right.
in 2020 and Division III players didn't play. A lot of Division III schools did not play in 2020, which is why there are a lot of Division III kids who have eligibility. Those kids have only played 3 years of college. Mike G is a good example of that. Like he was a freshman in the 2021 season that in Princeton did not play. They didn't. So a few other schools. I don't think Yale did. I don't think Penn did. They didn't play any competitions. So those schools, all of those kids have only played 3 years of college sports. They could get a fourth year, the traditional fourth year that kids got before.
But as you alluded to last week, Penn and Cornell are two Ivy League schools that look to be allowing fifth years to play, correct? This season.
Cornell for sure. And
right.
Penn does seem to have a few older guys, but they could be just other reasons. Princeton, I just know that their rules are you only get 4 years to play there.
Yeah, so
and if you
don't
do
it
continuously, you either have to sit out a whole year and kids study abroad or they get a job or an internship or something, and you have to unenroll from school.
Right.
But the other second point is not only the depth of talent, but a lot of the kids who are moving on, having a fifth year, landed in the ACC or the Big Ten. And you can just see the talent up and down those rosters that have been filled in with really good players. And again, I'm super excited for this college lacrosse season for a lot of reasons, but that depth of talent is really one of the biggest ones. Hey, Dix, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll bring in Tom Abbott, the NCAA National Coordinator of Officials, to talk to him about rule changes and officiating this season. Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by Simplicity Group. We'd like to welcome into the podcast Tom Abbott. Tom serves as the NCAA National Coordinator of Officiating, and he's been in that role since 2015. He's well-respected in the sport on many levels, and he received the USILA Howdy Myers Man of the Year Award in 2019. Welcome into the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, Tom Abbott.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
We really appreciate you taking some time to join us. We know it's a busy time of year, even though we're on the doorstep of a new lacrosse season with 20-plus games happening this season. But before we dive into the nitty-gritty, your role in NILOA and you know how you relate to the game in terms of officials, you are an official yourself and a lacrosse father. So I wonder if you can give folks a little bit of a rundown of your background, first as a lacrosse official, and then we'll dive into, being a lacrosse dad. We had a great conversation last week. I've got two boys now in college, and in addition to my broadcasting and other responsibilities, and we had a few laughs around how schedules look in the spring households.
Yeah, it's tough this time of year if you got kids playing. I had two boys playing. You and I talked about this last week. I had two boys playing at the same time. Michael, my oldest, was at Virginia and then transferred to Cortland. And Matthew played, obviously, for Syracuse for 4 years. You know, every parent's dream is to be able to get your kid into a tournament, into a championship game, into whatever. It's what club ball is all about these days. Everybody's doing the club scene with teams playing everywhere and all summer long. Takes a lot of money and effort by parents to do stuff. So we were no different. We didn't have quite the club situation that's there now when my kids were younger. So it was just starting when they were getting ready to go to college. But, trying to figure out what games are taking place in what towns and how you're going to get there and still be able to officiate from my point of view and my wife's point of view, what she had going on with work, trying to figure out what to do with her travel schedule. And we had a third third child, our daughter Melissa, was into horses, so we had to deal with that stuff. So I get it completely, how crazy it can be for folks, even more so now than it was back then. But I think we all have to keep a focus on where we grew up, where we came from, what our parents, they all molded what we did. So my dad was a sports guy. He was a World War II Navy guy, had been in Tokyo Bay at the end of the war when they signed the treaty. He's the guy that obviously got me started in it. He was a referee when he came back from the war. He ended up at Syracuse as a baseball player, didn't like the coach, and Roy Simmons handed him a lacrosse stick. So that's where my background comes from, is my dad. He became a referee. He started our Central New York group with a bunch of other guys as far as the Referees Association. They wanted to still play, so they became referees and players both, all these old guys. And it's really where I got my basis in lacrosse, was traveling to games with him and watching him referee and be around referees all the time. The camaraderie and the friendship that they had on their trips and during their games was a big time lasting impression on me. It's why I became a referee eventually. And after I got out of Syracuse, I played there and decided I was going to try to coach. That went for 1 year, and then I ended up basically jumping into the referee deal, and somebody liked what I did, so I ended up moving up the ladder pretty well. And I think the important part, Mark, is that back then we needed, obviously we still need refs, we need a lot of refs, but back then you needed people who knew the sport, and I played it and been around it my whole life, so I knew it really well. And people gave me the opportunity to move up. And that was really a really good time for me. But I started probably when I was in my early 20s. I was reffing college games my second year out. And that doesn't happen in today's world very often. Most of the time you get new referees and they have to spend a few years doing high school, and then they have to do a few years of training and club ball or whatever and summer tournaments. And then they eventually, if they're good enough or they get somebody to pay attention to them, they end up getting a tryout and becoming a division one, two, or three referee in our college group. So I was fortunate. I started right off in college when I was probably 22 or 3 years old, and I had a long time doing it. So the experience that I got early was major. It takes a long time for referees to figure out what they do well and how they handle things and how you can handle coaches. It's pretty hard to tell someone who's twice your age that they're out of line. It's tough. It's an acquired thing that takes experience and time. And we're trying now to get some of these younger guys into some other games that might help them down the road. That's our focus right now.
Well, and I can speak to that road, Tom. I started in 99. I was 27 years old. I didn't have my first college game till 2005. And I thought that was quick, to be honest with you. Your role with Nyloa, well, first, before we get into that, you're being modest. How many championship weekends, how many national semifinal games, how many national championship games have you officiated?
A bunch, I think probably 24 of 26 seasons, maybe that I was there. I think Warren Kimber, who was my predecessor as the national coordinator years ago, had that position for a long time. He and Jim Garvey, who was part of that group, and Charlie Phillips back in the day, they must have seen something. Warren took over and he liked what he saw with I think our Central New York group. We were really strong at that point. There was one time back in 2000 or 2002 where we had, back then we had CBOs, so the Final Four would have five games and there'd be 20 referees, and of the 20 referees we had 12 of the guys from our Central New York group, and that was a really strong basis. I think Warren really liked what he saw up here, and if you hang around long enough and don't step in too much stuff, you're okay. And so he gave me a lot of games, and I learned by being field judge and umpire, and eventually became referee on the Division III championship game one time. And it took some time to do that, but He had faith in me, and that's really all it's about. It's you need faith of your assigners and try to do the right thing. The bottom line is you got to know the rules. You have to be able to figure out how you can handle coaches. Some are different than others. Some you don't have to deal with too much. Each situation's different. I think my philosophy always was if I could have a green jersey and disappear into the grass after I made a call, that would be good. So that's kind of the way that I refereed. I let the kids play. I let the kids decide the game. And I tried not to have too much influence unless we absolutely had to step in. And that's the way I reffed.
Over your career, one or two most memorable games you ever took part in?
Good question. You got to say your first game, right? I would think. Mine was a JV game at Lafayette High School. And we had a goofy situation. Back then, it was a two-man game. Corning East and Lafayette was a pretty big game, even on the JV level back then. So it was my assigner jumped me in pretty quick.
Shout out Todd Cavallaro, Corning East.
Yeah, there you go. I think Dennis LeBaron, I think, was the coach. He was one of the former players that I'd known through club ball or something. But in any case, we had to play at the end of the game. Back then, the rule was if there was a flag on the field, you go behind the cage. You could bring it back out front once, but then you couldn't take it back a second time. So Lafayette's ahead by one, and there's a flag down on Lafayette for offsides or something. And Corning East took the ball behind, and they stayed there with it. And the clock ran out, and the game ended. And they were all upset about it. And I remember going to the table, to the bench area, and saying, "Fellas, this is not the Russian-American basketball game in the Olympics. You can't put time back on the clock." And I was worried that I was wrong, but I'd been around the game long enough to know that I was probably right. And it gained me the confidence to be able to know that I knew the rules better than most people. So that's probably the most memorable, was the first one. I think from college perspective, 2007, Duke Hopkins, right after Duke's scandal, they came back, lost to Hopkins by one on a shot that was close from midfield area, restraint line area. That was a big one. And I think the last one probably you remember the most, and it's, I'm getting older. So pulled a hamstring, had a bad hip. Warren and Bob Curcio were on the sideline. It was Maryland and Carolina at Annapolis in a quarterfinal. And this was the second game, and I had tweaked the hamstring the week before at Virginia. Hopkins and Virginia played. I think Hopkins clobbered him. But I tweaked the hamstring there, and I knew that I was probably going to have issues. And I told the crew from the first game, Brian Abbott and Doug Donovan were on that game, the first game. And I said to him before we went on the field, "Don't you guys leave until after halftime, because I'm not sure where I'm going with this thing." And sure enough, I backed up and couldn't get out of the way and ripped a hamstring pretty bad. And jokingly hobbled up to the midfield line and asked Warren if he had a uniform that he could put on. And immediately they called for Brian, and Brian took my place for the second half, one Abbott for another. So those are probably three of them that I can remember the most. I got to go back to my kids real quickly, because if there's a memorable year in the Final Four, I have to talk about 2009. Matthew played for Syracuse and won a national championship. Michael coached at Cortland, and they won a national championship. So I obviously could not do the Division III game or any of the Division I games. Warren put me on the Division II game as the referee. So all three of us were in final games at all three levels, which was kind of neat. That was really cool.
That is really neat. And injuries are real. I've been in games before, whether it's a college game. I've done it in the summer as well. When you pull that hamstring, that's not good because you're running, not as often as the athletes, but you're up and down that field covering the goal and getting to your spots. And any kind of injury is tough.
Yeah, Mark, it is. It's hard. I think in today's world, with the speed of the athletes, the size, the skill sets they have, I've been doing this job for a while now, 7, 8 years. And I remember the first time I went down on the field the year after I started this. And I'm like, "Oh my God, these guys are really fast." And it's grown exponentially in the last 5 or 6 years. They're just tremendously skilled. The games
Big time.
the rules have changed. It's amazing. You can't referee with injuries just like you can't play with them.
Tore my Achilles last year and came back this summer to officiate some. And younger kids, the club circuit, I'd play a game with myself almost. If kids got in transition, I'd try to keep up with the guy leading the fast break just to see how I could open it up a little bit. I don't do that anymore.
No,
I
be careful doing that.
don't
That's
do that anymore.
literally how I ripped my hamstring at Virginia. It was a piece of cake game, and I ran down the far side of the field just to make sure I could keep up with that kid, and I ripped it. And a week later, I'm done. That was it.
Tom, you mentioned how the rules have changed. I'd love to get your thoughts on the new rules for the 2024 season, especially the helmet coming off rule and instant replay.
Yeah, Dan, it's what you really have to understand is maybe the makeup of the rules committee first. Yeah, everybody thinks that the members of the rules committee sit in a closed room and make up this stuff. Everything's based upon surveys that they do. They send out to coaches and referees. The survey is based on current things that may or might be an issue that we think might be an issue in the game. And I think the important part is the makeup of that committee rotates. The only constant folks that are on the committee are the liaison to the NCAA itself, which now is Andy Supergan. It was Ty Halpin for years. They basically orchestrate the meeting. They don't vote. The national coordinator's on it. I don't vote. Warren never voted. The secretary of rules editor, who's Willie Scroggs now, was Don Zimmerman prior to that. They don't vote. So all we do, those folks just sit there and listen. So the committee members are made up of coaches, administrators, coaches from all levels, and administrators from all levels, Division One, Two, and Three. And their terms rotate. You might have two or three guys that are rotating out this year, and somebody new will be coming in next year in their place. And the makeup right now, John Tillman is the chairman. He's from an FBS school. We have administrators, Jerry Price and James Green, who are from Big East, and from Jerry's from Princeton, so he's an SID there. So the administrators have a lot to do with it, but they do vote. Those folks vote. All the coaches and the administrators vote. So the discussion is about what the survey says, what direction we may or may not need to go in. And the categories usually are pretty obvious, whether it's face-offs or goals, goal mouth, goal crease issues. And the last couple of years have been issues with players having their helmets come off during play. So that's kind of where that one came from. It doesn't boil over instantly, but it becomes a hot topic. And so that survey will show what people think about it. Replay was the same thing. Replay is, video review is in almost every other sport. It's in field hockey, soccer, football, ice hockey, the whole nine yards. Lacrosse was one of the last holdouts. Women went to it a year ago. We didn't go to it until this year. And every time you make a rule, you have to think about what the unintended consequences are. The last 2 minutes of a basketball game, you could make three sandwiches and have a cup of coffee. It takes forever. So what's good about lacrosse is the speed of the game, the tempo of the game, without too many interruptions. So last year we had to play in a semifinal game where we had two officials in absolute perfect position. They could not have been in better spots. One of the best referees in the country and one of the best young guys in the country were leading single. One was screened out, had to look through the ear hole of a player from Duke, couldn't see the crease line on the other side. And the other official was exactly where he needed to be, following the play to the goal. And we have principles, whether or not you're the trail or whether it's coming towards you or away from you, you're looking at foul, you're looking at feet. So if it's coming at you, you're looking for feet. If it's going away, you're looking for foul. And Mark will know this because we talk about it all the time. They're kind of unwritten rules. The lead official was completely screened out, could not see across the side of the field. He was right on the goal line, right where he needed to be, but he couldn't see the feet of the player driving to the cage. The trail official or the single official coming in from the other side was completely screened out from the players. So we have two guys in perfect position, and we miss it by a couple millimeters. That determines the outcome of maybe who would go to the next round, to the championship game. So this replay thing had been talked about for many years, and this was kind of the fruition of, well, I guess we finally got to get there. So the basis for not having too much to review in lacrosse was based upon other sports having too much to review, because it creates tempo issues. So I found, and so have committee members, that there's more and more that creeps in when you do replay. What are you going to review? How long are we going to stop the game? How's it going to be done? What iPads we're going to use? What broadcast cameras we have or don't have? What happens if the equipment doesn't work? So there's lots of things that creep in now that did not creep in before. So we're taking baby steps with it, but that's where the rules come from, is based on something, not just from what happened last year, but from what's happened from previous years. So I think the makeup of the committee, how the rules are made and developed, again, it's voted on by folks. It's funny, I sit in that room, I've been there for a while now, and they'll discuss whatever rules they're thinking about. And when the discussion's all over, all their heads come to me and to the guys that don't vote, and they say, well, what do you think? And because referees have a big part of how we're going to officiate whatever play they're trying to talk about.
So, can you guys pull this off almost?
Yeah. Can you actually do this? And I learned that from Warren years ago. He said, make sure that whatever they do with rules, that we're able to officiate it. And so the replay rule was based upon trying to get what really matters in the game right, which is goals, potentially timing issues, and player safety with contact to head and neck. So those were the three items that we've looked at and tried to limit it to. I'm sure there will be some others that come up to be discussed as we move through this over the next few years. But that was the basis for how those got there. And it's the same thing with all the other rules that happened prior to that. I mean, if you think back, Mark, we had, you know, as a referee, you know, we had four zones on the field. Goalie made a save. Zone one, you had 10 seconds to clear. Zone two, you could sit there forever. Zone three, you cleared the midfield line. There's another 10 seconds. Then you got to keep it in the other end. Our arms were moving all the time at that point. It was the first time we had to deal with that. So that's how shot clock was eventually developed. That was over a 10 or 15 year period where the committee wanted to look at pace of play. And I think they have to really, Bob Scalise was a chairman years back, and he had a great comment. He said, whatever's good for offense needs to be the same for defense. You have to look at both sides of the coin. What's good for all levels of play, because these rules right now are for Division I, II, and III and JUCO. And in some cases, a lot of high schools use the NCAA rulebook. So those rules are important. It's the way that they're developed. It has to have every level of play in mind with it at this point. There is talk about maybe having federated rules, that would become an issue, because now you got different rules for 1, 2, and 3 that would be hard to officiate. If you did a Division I game one day, a high school game the next day, as a referee, it becomes hard.
Yeah, no doubt.
What rules you're dealing with.
Yeah. So as you're mentioning all these things, Tom, I'm just rifling through. You mentioned shot clock, elimination of sideline horns, the quick restart, the dive, the goal mouth, everything. It's just a sport that continues to evolve, and officials have to. One more question, and we'll let you get out of here.
Yep.
You mentioned the progression of the rules. So the rules, as we sit here and talk to you last week of January / first week of February, and games happening this Saturday, February 3rd, they'll evolve through not only the preseason scrimmages that you've seen so far, but also the first couple of weeks of the season, correct? And
Correct.
how does that happen?
What really pans out now, Mark, is that we've had a couple weeks of scrimmages now. So I look at, for example, the helmet rule. It was put in to have kids be safe, our helmets staying on. So the game reports that come to us from officials right now, I want them to put down in their game report maybe how many helmets came off, what they did after that, what the player did after that. Did the same player have it come off twice? I'm finding that helmets are not coming off very often right now, not like they were. The rule did what it needed to do. I think the reason that we put it in there, the reason that the committee put it in there, was it's a safety issue. And in the long run, coaches didn't do their due diligence with making kids stay properly equipped, and referees didn't want to make it an issue. So we're all to blame. So now we have a helmet rule that's a little different than other technical fouls that occur with equipment. For example, the defensive player, if he lost his glove, used to have an option to play. He could participate or not participate. If he participated without equipment, it was a penalty, still is. But he had a choice. With the helmet rule, it's an immediate whistle. Helmet comes off, there are no choices. So what's the consequence? You can't just take the player off the field. If it's a defensive player, he has to serve as something. He may stop an imminent scoring play. So that's why they're a little different for if it's an offensive player or when the ball's loose, or if an offensive guy has possession and a defensive helmet comes off. So those are consequences that happen in that deal. So I think it's important to remember that referees are still working their way through this. I get questions all the time from officials. Warren did the same thing. He learned from referees that were in Nailoa. What happened in this case? What happened in this game? I'm collecting those right now, and they will be part of our educational materials as we move through the season. Replay will be the same thing. Not everybody's using it. It's a permissible rule, but not mandatory. I think there are many who are going to use it, but that will also evolve. How do you do a review? How many people are at the table? What can you see or not see? How many cameras are involved? So there's all kinds of questions that are going to come about from these two new rules, which are interesting that the committee did this in a non-rules change year. So we'll also have to deal with this plus whatever else comes along next summer if they decide to do something else that's different. But again, you got to be able to referee it. And I get my information from all of my former teammates, from the referees that I refereed with and the guys that are out there now that actually have to do it. So there is some influence from referees, but I think coaches have a lot to do with it as well, because they're the ones that send us the films.
Tom, thank you so much. Your perspective and background, especially on how and why these rules continue to evolve, is greatly appreciated. Thanks for spending some time with us. Good luck this season. And we're looking forward to what I think is going to be one of the most exciting college lacrosse seasons we've seen yet.
Thanks,
Thanks
Dan. I
again.
really appreciate it. The game's in a great place. I'm looking forward to it too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by Simplicity Group. Dix, before we get into this week's game previews, which I'm super excited about, what were your thoughts on the conversation with Tom?
I'm really glad that we were able to get Tom on. It's, as you can imagine, it's an incredibly busy time of year for him and the leadership of Nailoa. You know, one thing that I know we talked about after we recorded with Tom was there is a coaches liaison to the NCAA Rules Committee, and it is now Dave Petromala, the assistant coach, defensive coordinator at University of North Carolina. It was Bill Tierney, but with Coach Tierney's retirement, Dave Petromala takes on that role and is kind of the like the messenger, you know, for NCAA coaches that are not part of that rules committee. But it's it just talking with Tom, and you know, we've talked about this many times, and I've said it in this space a lot. Hardest game to officiate, hands down. men's Division I college lacrosse. You know, three guys covering 110 yards of field with all the different variations, size, the speed, the athleticism of the student athletes, the quick judgment that you need. And you never get a break, really. You never get a break with the quick restarts. So great to have Tom on. Loved how he explained how the new rules came about with the helmets and the instant replay. And wow, as a lacrosse dad with a busy schedule and wearing multiple hats, I can certainly relate to what he went through when his kids were younger.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been amazed at how you juggle your broadcast schedule, watching your kids play, officiating an occasional game during the season, and doing this podcast,
That's right. It's quite a time commitment.
and you have a full-time job.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I don't like. I applaud you. I have a question though. What do you do to stay in shape as an official? What do a lot of officials do to prepare for a season?
Well, it's interesting. You change your routine as you get older. And I say that after just celebrating my birthday. It's a lot of cardio, you know, because you do have to get up and down the field, but it's also a lot of strength training, resistance training, because you got to keep, you know, as we talked about with Tom, you know, the soft tissue stuff, you know, groins and hamstrings and those kinds of things. So it's a combination, you know, it's weight training and it's conditioning. You know, for me, I'll go to the gym, you know, and I'll do deadlifts and other types of resistance training, but I also always make time for core exercises. Got to keep the core solid. Or as solid as it can be. And then my cardio is typically either an elliptical machine or, you know, and I do a lot of walking, you know, 4 or 5 miles at a time at a brisk pace, because really for me, I've never enjoyed running, but as I've gotten older and of course, coming off the Achilles injury, you know, jogging or yogging, if you will, because the J is soft, is not in my vocabulary anymore. You know, the pounding of
Nice.
the pavement,
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that I do.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point where I can't even really run outside on pavement but on a treadmill, as boring as that is, I can go to the gym and run on the treadmill and it just does not hurt my knees or anything like that. And that's what I usually do. My goal is to shed some LBs and be able to get back out on the road or a track or something and not have to be stuck in a gym on a treadmill. Seems like it's a long way off, but
The older you
that's,
get, the harder it is,
yeah,
trust me.
really,
And then,
it is.
God forbid, you suffer a bad injury, you know.
Yeah. God, be careful, Dix, man. We need you. We can't afford for you to go down again this season.
I'm good. I'm good. I've lost some pounds. Speaking of LBs, I've lost a few pounds, and you know, damn, I'm loving me more.
All right, great. Hey, game previews, finally. We've been waiting all off season for this. There's 15 games on tap on this first Saturday of the season, including nine teams in the IL Media Top 20. And I believe that there's three more games on Sunday as well. So let's start off in-state college, Colgate at number four, Penn State. This game is at noon.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you have to assume that this game will be indoors based on weather traditionally, but hopefully they get to play this game outside. Colgate, a team in the Patriot League that continues to get better and better every year, going into state college against a team that, you know, was playing well enough to win a national championship at the end of last year. The overtime loss to Duke, the heartbreaker on the questionable goal scored by Garrett Ledman, but a Penn State team is going to welcome back Jack Posey into the fold after the injury that he suffered at the end of last year. TJ Malone, tremendous player for the Nittany Lions. Jack Frassion, one of the best goaltenders in the country. Question marks for Penn State. How will they face off? You know, I think that's one area that people are looking at, saying, you know, how will Penn State face off in 2024?
Staying in the Big Ten and the Midwest, Utah travels to Ohio State for a noon face-off. And both those teams are sitting just outside the top 20.
Well, the Utes are a team, and I had an opportunity to watch them live last year when I broadcast their game against Johns Hopkins. I mean, they're good, and they made the NCAA tournament. So this is a team with and a program with an upward trajectory for sure. And they're facing an Ohio State team that had a really disappointing 2023 season, didn't make the Big Ten tournament, and obviously didn't make the NCAA tournament. So I think the Buckeyes, a lot to prove. And they've got talent. They've got some transfers in. But, you know, this could be a good measuring stick, even though it's, you know, first weekend in February. This could be a really good measuring stick for Ohio State, because Utah, the favorites in the Atlantic Sun. And you have to applaud the tough out-of-conference schedule that Coach Andrew McMahon employs for his Utes.
Game in Baltimore, number 12, Georgetown, will play the Greyhounds at 1 o'clock.
A lot of questions around Georgetown this year. I get a lot of questions about the Hoyas, and they lose a ton of scoring, but it could be a more balanced Hoya team in 2024. Graham Bundy is the headliner. Can TJ Haley get back to his freshman year when he was a 50 plus point scorer? You know, he really fell off last year because he just didn't have a ball on a stick as much with the personnel that they employed. They'll be young on the back line. We'll start a freshman goalie and probably two freshmen at close. And faceoffs will be a question mark for Georgetown. Playing a Loyola team that has had two, by Loyola standards, disappointing seasons, 500 ball, not making the NCAA tournament either year. Last year's team took a step forward in making the Patriot League championship game, falling to Army. Adam Patra is a terrific player for the Loyola Greyhounds. Evan James returns for another season as well. But defensively, this team has some question marks. They say goodbye to Cam Wires and some other experienced, you know, Peyton Razanka in the short stick D midi position. And this is a rivalry where Georgetown has blown out Loyola the last 2 years. So Loyola definitely coming into this game with a lot to accomplish.
Moving on, we have Lehigh at number 15, Rutgers at 1 o'clock.
New head coach for the Mountain Hawks in Will Scudder, longtime defensive coordinator, takes over for Kevin Cassis, slides down to Charlottesville to be their offensive coordinator. Scott Cole, preseason Patriot League offensive player of the year. He's a terrific offensive talent. Guy has just gotten better throughout his career in the Lehigh Valley. Traveling, you know, playing against a Rutgers team. We talked about it last week. You know, the headliners, Ross Scott and Kane Otlock, reports out of, you know, they had a scrimmage this past weekend against Villanova and just really, really, really took care of business against the Wildcats. I always equate like UMass, Army, Lehigh, Rutgers, always good litmus tests early on to see how each team's seasons are going to progress. And I feel like this year is no different with the Mountain Hawks and the Scarlet Knights.
Yeah, this is going to be a good game. We've got two more games to preview, both of them featuring top 20 matchups. The first one, number 6, Maryland, is at number 20, Richmond, 1 o'clock on Saturday.
So Maryland scrimmaged both Duke and Georgetown. And from reports, they quote unquote lost both of those scrimmages. But maybe no team has a bigger chip on their shoulder coming into 2024 than University of Maryland. They've got a lot of talent. We talked about Logan McNaney returning between the pipes. Ajax Apatello, preseason first team All-American, one of the best in the country. Offensively, midfield-wise, those guys need to figure it out and get it together. So you have Braden Erks, a terrific freshman year, and then Eric Spanos. He looks like he's ready to take that next step. And this is a Richmond team. I watched them scrimmage Loyola on this past weekend, and they dominated the Greyhounds early before Loyola settled in and made a game of it. You know, Richmond is a team that will face off well. I think they get good goaltending, and they've got an efficient offense. So this, over the last couple years, has been a lopsided, you know, series. Because I don't want to say rivalry, because Richmond's never beaten Maryland, but this game could be closer.
And finally, our game of the week, number 13, Denver, with new head coach Matt Brown, at Homewood Field, facing the number 5 Blue Jays. A lot of excitement at the Homewood campus this year as the season gets underway. That game is at noon.
Expectations are back for the Hopkins faithful. And this is a program that, you know, last year was kind of that pivotal year, third year under head coach Peter Milliman. What could he do? Well, he got him to the NCAA quarterfinals and he got himself a contract extension. So a lot of scoring back. They will miss Mazzone defensively. I think they'll miss Hawley on the faceoff wings. And that is a question mark for Hopkins, faceoffs. But, you know, defensively, this team, Scott Smith, I think he has established himself as one of the best defenders in the Big Ten. Now I think he's ready to be one of the best defensemen in the country. Just a really, really good player. A team that has, you know, a lot of experience. I mean, that attack unit, Melendez, Angeles, and Degnan. You know, Degnan seems like he's been on campus since Bill Brody was president of Johns Hopkins University. And then you look at Denver, you know, a team at this was a scrimmage a year ago. Denver came out to play Johns Hopkins. Now it's a game. And new head coach Matt Brown, although he's been around the Denver program for a long, long time and, you know, has produced so many terrific offensive players. And then Dave Metzbauer, the new offensive coordinator for the Denver Pioneers. So, you know, Denver is a team that is undergoing some transition, you know, after legendary Bill Tierney, legendary coach Bill Tierney stepped down. But they're going to be excited. They're going to be hyped for this game. And they feel like this will be a tremendous feather in their cap and out of conference win. Can they come into Baltimore and knock off the Blue Jays on Saturday?
Six. I'm noticing that all six of our marquee games that we previewed are either at noon or 1 p.m. the first weekend of the season. So my point, Dix, is we've talked about this over the years. You know, college football, college basketball, they start their seasons so the fans can watch some of the best games. But we have literally the six games that we picked out as probably the best games of the weekend, all happening within a 3 hour window of like block of time. You can't watch them all. You can't be at Hopkins at noon and Loyola for the 1 o'clock game. Why can't we organize this better to have a staggering of these games over the course of the first weekend of the season?
Well, I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. I know that we've talked about it quite a bit, and other people, you know, pundits in the lacrosse world have talked about that too. But let's look at where we are. You know, it's February 3rd, so you got to take weather into consideration. You can't be playing these games at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, let alone after the sun goes down. Also, I mean, we're still like, are people even going to realize it's lacrosse season yet? I mean, people like us will. And the fans, the diehards will. But for a lot of people, you know, football's still going on, even though it's a Super Bowl that I may not even watch the Super Bowl this year. That's how
Okay.
disinterested and disheartened I am by a Niners Chiefs matchup. And then it's, you know, college basketball is still king right now. So
Yeah, Duke
hey,
plays Carolina. Is Owen going to the game
I
Saturday
haven't checked.
night?
I haven't checked on that. I, like I said, they scrimmaged Drexel and Washington Lee. We will not be going down for it, but I'll see if,
It's
you
his
know, as a
first
freshman,
Duke game.
he might not be able to score that ticket. He went,
Really?
I know he went when they played Tennessee, and then he's also attended a few of the ACC games. I think Georgia Tech's, or I think he's
Oh, cool.
Georgia Tech, Syracuse. He's gone to quite a number of games this year. So,
Yeah, that's cool.
yeah.
All right, Dex, it's time for our give and go. And we're recording earlier than we usually do in the middle of the week. And it's got me thinking about breakfast. So our give and go this week is pretty simple. You're walking into a diner to get some breakfast, and you get to pick first. We'll alternate from the different categories, but you can only pick one. And you can't pick what I pick. All right. So first one, I'll give you the first one. What's your entree? You get omelet, eggs, pancakes, French toast. What's the entree you're getting when you walk in?
So, you know, I can't answer this just like simply. And the reason that I'll say this is because with diners, it's tricky. You could go in for lunch and you're like, oh man, do I order breakfast? Do it because diners are breakfast all day,
Yeah.
every day, right? But to answer your question, I love pancakes, but I can't eat pancakes. I mean, it's just there's no nutritional value. They taste delicious,
You
but
get strawberries put on them or blueberries
It's
inside
just going to
them.
be a
Yeah.
rock sitting in my stomach,
Yeah.
you know, for the rest of the day. So omelet, and I enjoy a good Swiss bacon mushroom omelet.
Okay.
Would probably be my go-to.
All right, so if I can't get omelet, I'll go with French toast then. For the same reason, I like
Love French
pancakes,
toast.
but I can only eat like two pancakes. So I will go with the French toast as my entree. Okay. Now, you're ordering eggs. How are you getting your eggs? Scrambled, sunny side up, over easy, poached, eggs Benedict. What kind of eggs you get? If you
Oh
don't
my
get an
God.
omelet, you got
Yeah,
you got.
sure. Love Eggs Benedict. Eggs Benedict
Okay.
will be my go-to. Yeah.
All right, I'm getting scrambled. I like couple, two, three eggs scrambled. That's what I'm
Right.
going with. All right.
If I don't
So
go Eggs Benedict though, and this is very contradictory, I typically like to go over hard eggs. I don't like runny. When I get eggs without the Eggs Benedict type thing, I don't like runny eggs, so I would get it over
same.
hard.
All right, sides. I get to pick first. And that you know, I'm talking about the potato sides. Okay. I'm gonna go with the breakfast potatoes, like the potatoes cooked up with green pepper, onion, like potatoes O'Brien type of thing. Maybe some Old Bay thrown in there. But you can pick, that's my pick. You can pick hash browns, tater tots, something else like that.
Well, I would go grits, and in particular cheesy grits would be my starch, I guess.
Wow. It's a highfalutin. I'm
Yeah.
midfalutin. I'm
Miss
always like
Shirley's
midfalutin.
little cheesy grits.
All right. What is your choice of meat? You got sausage patties, link sausage, bacon, scrapple. What are you going with?
Bacon, for sure. Bacon.
Okay. I'm gonna go sausage link. Although I do love me some scrapple, I usually would go with the link sausage. You can usually find that. And sometimes they have new, like, you know, they used to just get the little Jimmy Deans. Now there's bacon smoked applewood stuff. Always
The
something.
problem with sausage for me is, depending upon how it's cooked, I like my sausage cooked well.
That's the
And
only way, right?
some of them are just too plump, or I don't know. I don't the cons maybe the
It's pork. You
texture,
got
the
to cook
consistency.
it.
I prefer a sausage patty to a sausage link.
Okay. What kind of like bread are you getting? You get a bagel, you get toast, you get, you know, white toast, wheat toast,
Don't
rye.
you want to pick this first? Don't you get to go
Oh,
first?
yeah. I'll go with, I get like wheat toast. Dry with like butter and maybe some jelly or something on the side, some jam.
Dry oatmeal. Dry oatmeal. So I don't do it. I don't do it anymore, but I used to love to get just toast and then some butter and like grape jam, and then I'd
Yeah.
put my egg on the on
Oh.
that. And then eat it all together. People look at me like I was 10, you know, with jelly and eggs combined.
Right.
So I would go toast, but I guess I can't pick toast. So if I'm not picking toast, I'm bagels, fine.
Bagels, go ahead. All right, and lastly, a side dish. You're allowed to get it aside. What do you like? You have some fruit. You're gonna get cream chip beef. What are you going with?
That's on a shingle, the cream
Yeah,
chip beef.
yeah.
Yeah. Fruit for sure.
All right, I go with the cream chip beef, and I
You
just
like the S
say,
on a shingle.
yeah, I do. And I'm like, don't give me the. I don't need the bread and all that stuff because. I just, it's so good. I love cream chip beef. So
Yeah.
my regular order is I will get a Western omelet with a side of cream chip beef. That's like my,
Wow.
if I can get anything I want. But usually they're sold out, like Frank's Diner that used to be on Route One. Love that place. You go in there, if you got in there after like 11 o'clock, they're out of it every time.
Really?
Out of cream chip beef. You had to get there early. Yeah.
My go-to diner these days is the EC diner right up the street
Yeah,
from us.
it's
That
so
place
good.
is, I went in there a couple Sundays ago. I ordered carry. We n normally order carry out from there versus going, but it was a Sunday lunchtime,
Packed.
and I ordered like a Cobb salad or something, and was going to pick it up. It was not only was it standing room only, it was like an overflow. People were
Yeah.
out waiting to get in.
Love that place. My kids
Terrific.
love that place. I will post in this article or on social media, the at D Flying Dixie Twitter account. Look for pictures of the EC Diner milkshakes.
Crazy shakes.
Crazy shakes. They cost
They're
like
great.
15 bucks, but it'll be a milkshake that has a piece of chocolate cake on it, or a cupcake, or
Cheesecake.
an Oreo cookie ice cream sandwich. They're unbelievable. And
They ought to rename them the diabetes shake.
they look better I mean, they are tasty,
They're delicious. I had
but
one years
they
ago.
look amazing. They just look
Yeah.
absolutely amazing.
I actually got to rewind on the bread. I'm a big biscuit guy. I love
Oh,
biscuits.
I didn't
Like you
include
go to
biscuits.
Cracker Barrel, I could eat
Yeah.
a dozen biscuits. Biscuits, man.
Yeah, biscuits.
And I can
I
do
didn't do
them
biscuits
biscuits
either.
with jelly and jam or biscuits and gravy. Like I love biscuits.
Yeah, he loves his biscuits. I think that is a good place to stop. Reminder that the DeFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm, specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Dixon, I'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. And we always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at dflyanddixie. That's DFLYANDDIXIE. On Twitter, he's at Dixon Lacrosse if you want to get out to him by himself. And I am simply at D_FLY. See you next week and enjoy the games.